This episode is a co-production by the RPG Academy and the Rollist. This panel is a recording of a stream on the Twitch channel of the RPG Academy. A video version is available on the YouTube channel of the RPG Academy and the Rollist. If you join our newsletter, for which you can find a link in the description of this episode, you will be informed in advance of future broadcasts. This way you could join us live on Twitch and contribute with your own question via our chat room.
Okay, I think we should be live. I hope we are live. We are a little bit late. Sorry about that. Welcome to the Rollist Present, our second episode of 2020. And as the show dedicated to the tabletop gaming, tabletop role-playing community and industry across Europe, what better than have a special episode about one of our nations, Portugal, also known as Lusitania. We have here guests to tell you about everything that is happening all the way from Faro down to the south to Braga up to the north. I looked that up on Wikipedia. Could you each introduce yourself, please, starting with ladies first? Claudia, maybe?
Wait, there's ladies in here? Nobody told me?
Well, we got a cat lady.
Fine. Hi, I'm Claudia. I come from the north. That means I curse a lot, which I'll try to contain during this because we want to be educational, but not in that way.
It's interesting because the north has a very different meaning here in the UK. When you said that immediately, I was picturing Manchester.
I've been role-playing for a long time. My connection seems a bit weird. So as I was saying, I've been role-playing for a long time, since 97. I'm a huge role-play fangirl. I run I help running the Portuguese Discord server. And I've created with my best friend the first game jam, the first RPG creating game jam, which is RPG Genesis from Portugal. And we've been running for a couple of years now. Well, since 2010, I believe.
Amazing. Where was I going? And I hope we have maybe a few from your Discord channel in the chat with us, and they will have questions or suggestions of things to tell about.
I told them threats may have been issued, maybe not. So I don't know. I mean, I hope so. Otherwise, I'm just going to make their life. I mean, I'm very sad.
Well, at least I hope we'll have at least Nuno, who's London-based, and some of you know, to ask some questions. We'll find out later. Daniel, can you introduce yourself?
Yes, my name is Daniel. I'm a writer. I have a couple of books published and a few more on the way. I've been creating tabletop RPG content for both Speculatory and Rubber Chicken. And everything about what tabletop RPGs are, writing some reviews on certain games, and tips and tricks for both players and game masters. As a member of Role Initiative's team, I created items, classes, races, and such for mainly Dungeons & Dragons. And I'm also broadcasting both my campaigns of Dungeons & Dragons 5e and Vampire the Masquerade 5e through Role Initiative's channel. On a more personal note, I'm fairly new to the scene. I only have about 5 years of role-playing games under my belt. And beyond some games of my own design, such as Azilu and more recently Deus Vult, I've been conducting a study on how useful tabletop RPGs can be for people with autism, depression, and anxiety. On a nutshell, it's basically this.
We should get you in touch with Tube here. He's very into the subject of role-playing games as a tool to explore a different, I don't know if that's the right way of calling it, mental conditions. I don't remember the name of her, but she most of the time is D-I-D-N-D, because it's Yeah, she can tell us about that. Anyway, Andre, final, last but not least.
Hello.
Who are you?
Who am I?
That's the hard question.
That's the hard question. So
that's the question.
I'm Andre. I'm also new to the RPG scene, like Daniel. I only started playing at 2015, but it was a wild journey the last 2 years since I started producing content also at Roll Initiative, which stands for Roll for Initiative. I run a show there, which is Roll for Diplomacy. I already interviewed awesome designers like Adam Coble, Luke Crane, John Harper, and my beautiful idols, the Family Baker. I'm also the co-owner and co-designer of role-playing games at Mare Baixa, which stands for Low Tide. It's like an indie tabletop game publisher thing with me and my peer Carlos Martins. And we are making games. We are trying to make new stuff. We are at this very moment preparing a game for the Zine Quest at Kickstarter. And I'm also the founder of Rolisboa, which is like the Portuguese convention, RPG convention. And that's basically, I play a lot of games, at least 1 to 3 games per week I try. And I sleep very few amount of hours.
The interview you mentioned, they are available for people to view and listen in English, I assume, because your guests are English
speaking. Yes, obviously. When I have Portuguese guests, which is the usual case, it's in Portuguese because we are a Portuguese content platform. Our goal is to engage with the Portuguese community. But when we invite an international designer or international host or guest, it's in English.
So people can find that on YouTube on the Rola Iniciativa.
Yeah, just Roll for Diplomacy and you'll find probably Adam Coble video, which is obviously, since he's an online celebrity, it's the one with the more views. So, yeah.
So let's move on in our first question, and we swap things around following the suggestions from Claudia, which was very good. So The first question is, how did tabletop role-playing game arrived in Portugal?
Okay, so this is the thing you're going to understand about Portuguese role players. We are incredibly resistant to translated stuff. You can't get any translated material in Portugal. You can get Portuguese role games, but you can't get translated. So, and this is, I learned this from talking to the people that were there, because I came in the second generation of role players. I came in the 90s, late 90s. So apparently role play in Portugal began with a red box that people would buy outside, like abroad, and then they would bring in. And then
the Dungeons
would,
and Dragons.
Yeah, the red box from Dungeons and Dragons. And they would just spread it. This was in the late 70s, like 79, early 80s. So it started really, really early. And it was really surprising because from the stories I hear from the older generation, that are still, some of them are still around, they actually mentioned that we were the ones that then imported this into Brazil. And even though Brazil now has a massive role scene, it's like 10 times bigger than ours, maybe more, it was still us who got role first. And we served as a platform. It was Dungeons and Dragons that started it. The thing is, though, when AD&D started to die and like losing popularity in the 90s, and that's when Vampire the Masquerade came in full force, that's basically what happened in the 90s. The second generation was mostly World of Darkness. Here, it was played mostly World of Darkness. It was played mostly by university students like myself. Whereas by comparison, the people in the first generation, they actually were all people already with their own families and disposable income. So there's not the thing that I see happens a lot in England, where really young children start playing D&D in school, like 16, 15, you're already playing it. Here, there is this thing where we do seem to be older. There is not a lot of young role players. We all seem to be a bit on the up to 20 and above. And when Vampire the Masquerade dropped them, people were a bit younger. We were all in our early 20s. And then D&D returned in force, but it started to spread. It's different in the area where you were, because I know that in Porto, in the north where I am, Pathfinder became incredibly popular. Like, it was the only played game until D&D 5th edition came through. Like, D&D 4th edition still had some popularity, but a Pathfinder, like, basically owned it. I'm not sure how it was in the rest of the country, though. I'm not sure how things were in, for example, Lisbon, which is the capital of the south, and it's the biggest city. But here, it was like Pathfinder was the unbeatable foe. And then 5th edition hit recently, and then suddenly everyone's playing it, and we constantly, in the Discord channel, get new and new people going, oh, I just found out about roleplay, I want to play D&D. So a lot of people don't even know there are games that aren't D&D.
It's interesting because what you describe of the 90s is the experience I went through, and which I assume to be everybody's experience before I started the D-Rollist podcast, and I started interviewing people, because in the French-speaking world, in France and Belgium, I assume in Switzerland, the bankruptcy of TSR created this space for other games to populate. And when I played, it was indeed World of Darkness, which was extremely popular. And it was something for teenagers and 20-something. And it had a very different vibe than the sort of stories I hear from the UK when... It makes sense when you think about it that, of course, in the UK, children can read Dungeons and Dragons, while in Belgium and France, it has to be translated. It's not always the case, and so on. So yeah, it makes total sense. But it's just we never had this discussion. Andre, Daniel, does that reflect your experience of the community?
Yeah, well, since I'm my playing spot is the Lisbon, although I do not live in Lisbon, I live near it. But today I'm actually near Faro, which is kind of crazy. So we are reaching from South Portugal and North Portugal. But regarding the role playing, the starting of the role playing, I know that we had one translation, only one, since the very beginning, a red box at 89 or 87, I can't remember quite well. At Lisbon, Pathfinder is famous, but not as so much famous like in Porto. Dungeons & Dragons rules everything. But I do believe that's the case in everywhere in the world. So, but now it's changing. Somehow it's changing. But that's for later questions, I believe.
Mm. Apparently in Germany, the Zwart Ogre, the Black High, is still ruling over the land because it's taking quite a while for the edition to be translated to German. I've heard that there's been some issues with the translation of 5th edition in Portuguese as well, especially in Brazil, something which got cancelled. I remember, I guess you went through that also, that we had a weird situation when Wizards said there would not be any translation, but they did the SRD or GL, Open Gaming Guild license or whatever, and local publishers rushed doing a version of 5th edition nationally in their language, kickstarted them, and by the end of the Kickstarter, that's when it was revealed that there would be a translation in French, Spanish, and so on, and it created a number of issues. I mean, I'm doing a... You see, Claudia, you were saying you would go travel on the site travel. I'm doing exactly the same.
It's perfectly fine. I understand your pain. Also, we're not going to get any translation because it probably won't sell.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, God, yeah. Like, we like our roleplay pure. we don't. Like, seriously.
What does it mean,
find. It means No, this is because I used to have, when I was in high school, I used to have a translation subject. Like, it was English translation techniques. It was like literary curriculum. And the teacher was also my English teacher. And used to say to me and everyone that translation is betrayal. And we have to accept it. And apparently we Portuguese do not take betrayal or playing games because we only take them in the original language. Unless it's French, then we might actually accept the kind of the only case I know of is Shadows of Esteren, which I think got translated to English.
Cool. Game. Wow, nice. But
I never bought it because it's dark fantasy and I do not like fantasy.
Well, just a little clarification I will ask from you three then. So from what you're saying, does that mean that the sort of language landscape of Portugal is similar to, let's say, the Netherlands, where most people are bilingual? Most people have a decent mastery of English, meaning that you don't really need often translation of stuff from Dutch to English because people just speak English fluently.
Yes and no. Look, we don't dub things. In television, dubbing is just for children. You only get dubbed television if you're a child. And even when I was a little girl, cartoons were old subtitles. Okay, you can go to the movie and 90% of the movie are not dubbed, are subtitled.
It's so like the Netherlands.
We have a lot of exposition, but we're terrible in general. And I say this as a former English teacher. We're decent. Like, compared, I don't know, Spain, that seem to have a bit of a trouble acquiring new language. But yes, we do have that comfort of dealing on a daily basis with a foreign language. So I guess that's why. And also, it's cheaper for us to get role-playing games in their original language. So I guess that's also we're cheap. Well, I mean, we're poor, but sure. And I think that's why one of the many reasons why we tend to prefer things, role-playing games, in their original language, except if it's French, because French is really hard.
So Daniel, what do you think of that?
I mean, translations, yes, it's a topic for a really hot debate, and both Claudia and Andres said previously, we are comfortable if we content that comes from its original source, and when it comes to role playing and DMing a session, we tend to, and I speak on my own experience, we tend to blend languages. When I'm DMing a session of Dungeons and Dragons, and I ask a player to make an insight check, I say insight. I don't go for the Portuguese version of the word. And when we go to the subject about dubbing and subtitles, yes, only cartoons and more animated movies focus on children ended up being dubbed. And even when it comes to dubbing, the voice actors that we have, when it comes to roster size, are very low when comparing to other countries. Like, okay, I'm going to be a little extreme here, but Japan. So, if we, when it comes to the origins of everything, yeah, Dungeons and Dragons, of course. And we only had one translation. Like, Andrea, I can pinpoint the date. But it was a translation of the Red Box. I know that right now, I believe they cost a fortune to acquire. But yeah, we don't really bother with translating stuff since we are comfortable with reading the original content.
So we discussed that a tiny bit already, but would you say that, I don't know, if you traveled a bit, maybe seen some streams from the US or the UK or other countries, do you feel that there's a, Portuguese way of playing role-playing games. What are you the most? What are most players a lot into? I hear there's a lot of Pathfinder. Does that mean that Portuguese players like tactical things, or are they more into the role-playing, which I know is the case for the French ones?
Well, so if there's an actual way of playing role-playing games as a Portuguese, well, it really is. We all play with a pastel de nata, you know, near us. Yes, we throw dice and we take a bite. Then we throw. No, that doesn't happen. But
we grow a mustache before playing.
And yeah, you got the chicken, like flattened, and the sardines.
Oh, beautiful sardines. No. There isn't like a specific way. There are things that I would like to pinpoint that happens to me and I see happen at least in the Lisbon community, which is what Daniel said, and it's very, very true. Like you use the English words, it's the English mannerisms all the time. And sometimes the Portuguese word blends with the English one and it creates a new one, even if it is not correct, grammatically correct. And it's even weird for most or some players saying some words in Portuguese, like chainmail. I was playing Dungeons & Dragons. I said chainmail in Portuguese, which is cotted malha. And my players cringed at the word. And they said to me, don't say that, please. Say chainmail, the actual English word. We play with a lot of English mannerisms in Lisbon. Now, there isn't so much Dungeons & Dragons at the role-playing meetings and conventions. There is a resurgence, or at least a surge of a new wave of new games being designed because of last year, 2019. And we are not weird. We don't play with sardines and Stelman.
it goes contrary to what I'm being told in the chat room. Sanguinia, I think, is confirming there's always Bacalo and everything Asado, which I'm not sure what that means. I was wondering, does that mean that you don't have words for things like Beholder or Illithid or Tarrasque?
No.
Tarrasque, it's a name? So you wouldn't translate it, but for example, Beholder is like a pun in English that we don't have it in Portuguese. Like the closest we have to the eye of the beholder is who loves the ugly, finds it beautiful. So no, we don't.
I got a pun in French.
Also, I have a bit of information for you like this. The thing we do, and I also do that, which is shifting between Portuguese and English, is called switching. And proof, it's actually good for your brain, and it's actually set off brain diseases for 5 years, like, what's it called? The one that starts with an A. The problems you get from age, it keeps your brain proper fit. So it sets off like... makes it takes 5 years from your brain just doing that, make it less likely to get Alzheimer's. Yeah, like 5 years later, and it's proved. The scientists have tested that, so it's good. Keep doing that. Good, yeah.
Okay. Jeez. Awesome.
Right. Actually, I had a quick question because I found out through my show that in most languages there's no word for role player. Even in English, it's not really used. And French for that was kind of unique because someone did, I'm not sure if it was Didier Guisseric, might have been somebody else, but he created the word rolliste, which means a role player. So do you have word for rolliste in Portuguese?
We could cheat. We could just call it rolista, which is because Portuguese is so similar to French, but it doesn't make much sense. So, but theoretically, we could call ourselves rolistas.
But we don't. We actually call ourselves role players. Like the online community and the communities in every place. Like it's the group of role players of Lisbon. Like we
at
actually
most at Lisbon, most be players of role play. Like sometimes I say I am a player of RP.
But yeah. There was yeah, one you person, were,
oh, sorry.
No problem. There was one person that tried a couple of years ago to make the new word meaning role players, which Claudio is very near to him, which is jogador sonhador. And I know that he tried to make the words jogador, which is player, and sonhador, which is dream, like dream a player or dream players, like the our Portuguese way of saying role players. But it didn't quite stick. So it's his nick.
I remember asking even role-playing game and I found Jogo de Interpretação, but I had people sending me message telling me actually it's not really used.
No. At this moment we are trying to stick with the Jogo Narrative, which is like a narrative game. It's the best take we are trying to stick in the community.
Yes, some people,
so
yeah.
So Daniel, you were saying, to speak a bit earlier.
About the name of creatures and something, and we had a conversation a few years back with a friend of ours, Joaquim Martins, about the problems and such related to translations. And when it comes to literal translations, there came the example of the mind flayer, which in Portuguese will stand for esfolamento. And it was an interesting reaction, and praise the heavens that such kind of translations do not exist.
Okay, so that was hilarious, and I also never want to hear it again because my mind is now flayed. That is a horrible word, and you should be ashamed of yourself.
It's so anyway. Interesting because you seem to, I mean... The French, they have this culture, and it's even politically enforced, of protecting French as a language because it's feeling under threat. So it's very important to have French words for English stuff. And sometimes it's enforced by government into completely ridiculous ways, like in business management, you've got terms which, or even an email. Personally, I like it. They translate the email to courriel, for courrier électronique, but shortened, and stuff like that. So it's very important for the French in general. It's interesting to hear that for the Portuguese, it's a bit... it reminds me of the Dutch.
We can't be asked. Seriously, I think that's just it. We can't be asked. Now, in an attempt to bring this back to the original pie, I was going to mention that, again, I haven't enough in other countries to know if they're really different from Portugal to the point that there is a Portuguese way to do things. But the one I've noticed is that role-playing is a community hobby, or where you gather with the people you don't know and you talk about role-play and you play with them, is something that is a very recent turn of events in Portugal. Because until that recently, Portugal was like something you did with your mates, like poker night. You did it with friends, people you really know. That's how I met some of my best and oldest friends, like Jogador Sonhador, aka Gamer Dreamer Man. In England, I've known that people just create groups and say, look, we have a community of rope, we gather players, you want to come over and pay small fee, and then you can sit at the table with strangers and play with them. And in Portugal, that didn't happen. It's like you have a very small, fixed community, a group of friends that roll together. They probably shift around who was game mastering. Some of the times you did it at the same time. Like when I was in college, I game mastered and played in the games of all of my friends at the same time. So I used to play like five times a week. And that is something that I've never seen happening in any other country that I know of. It does seem to have this whole very community feel, like you don't know this person, but you can go to a convention and sit and play with them. And that only started to happen here very recently. And even there's still not a lot. Like there, I know, like my current group, it's only part of it that is contact with the rest of the community of role players. Most of them just go, no, I don't care about the rest. I don't give a thing. I don't care. And that's why it also becomes really hard for you to give a proper census of what happened in Portugal, who, what genres people like, what is the gender of the players, ages. It's really hard to determine because there are hundreds of these tiny, tiny, tiny groups, self-nations, don't contact with each other or the rest of the world. The only point of connection is like usually the oldest player or the usually those are the ones that go forth and talk to other game masters and all that. But other than that, like there's these proudly alone community of gamers that you don't know and you can't ever know unless you become their friends.
That actually ties in a bit to a question from Nuno. Hello, Nuno, of proudly London-based Portuguese player. He was asking, what changes have you seen over the last, let's say, five years in the Portuguese community? Do you see that sort of dramatic impact and positive impact from something like Critical Role? Or do you see an influx of young players thanks to 5th edition and is these things which you are describing starting to change in any way?
It's really hard to say because, again, I think Portugal is becoming a two type country because on the one hand, you do have this influx of people who come in and they watch Strange Things and they see Rick and Morty and they go, oh, there is D&D. And they also have this weird notion that D&D is roleplay. And they know nothing else until we come to them and hammer them. No, there are other things. At the same time, you have these lonely city-states of roleplay, these small, focused groups that just play whatever the game master wants. Like, he wants to be experimental. We're going to play, I don't know, In Nomine, the original French one, and people will play. And that's what I did. I roleplay a really lot of weird things when I was starting to roleplay. But it hasn't so much as changed as it became sort of like two side-by-side currents. They never meet except in certain cases. Like, for example, myself, I am very community-oriented. I deal with a lot of people. I have role-played with Andre. I have Game Master Andre. But I know of people in my group that I have to like force them to come to the Discord and they will not participate don't know and they just don't care. They want their little group. They're happy in their little group. So you kind of will have both. I mean, both, best of both worlds, I guess.
Those sort of two parallel worlds are things we also have in the UK, to be honest. You got all the critters. They are very active and even active in convention and cosplay and this sort of things. But they go at conventions like MCM Comic Con, where you got the anime and all this stuff I love. It's not a question. I'm not judging anything. But then you got the conventions of gamers, which already that's not, a lot of people stay on in their group and never meet anybody else. But those are two separate worlds. And right this year, we've got Critical Role coming to MCM Comic Con on the same weekend as UK Games Expo here. On one hand, a few people I know were like, oh, it's the same date, it's a conflict, which one I'm going to go to. But on the other hand, on the wider spectrum, the Venn diagram doesn't really overlap because critters don't go that much to UK Games Expo, and people who go to UK Games Expo are not that much in Critical Role, most of them.
Also
Daniel
weak.
And Andrew, maybe, sorry.
Very
sorry
weak, to... because there are going to be threes there, and besides, Critical Role came already to MCM Comic Con the other, like last year. So they'll come back, like go to Games Expo, it's great.
Awesome. But, I mean, they can listen to the Release podcast, who went to MCM Comic Con, recorded Critical Role there, and Critters.
Both
and,
are three days, like you can just travel, and it's like 2 hours by train from London to Birmingham, and I know that because I do it every year. Every year I come through London to Birmingham. So yeah, we
respect.
Can do it.
So Daniel and Andre, do you see that in the communities you are engaging?
I mean, yeah, you need to talk about the Critical Role effect. And in my case, that's the reason why I started role-playing. I came into contact.
Oh, really? Wow.
I came into contact with Dungeons and Dragons, of course, because it's Dungeons and Dragons.
Boo, Claudia, with me. Boo, you don't have to start with Dungeons and Dragons. In nomine Satanis, Nephilim, Vampire the Masquerade.
Shame on you. Shame on your cow. Shame on your family. Shame on your wife.
Yeah, yeah.
It's nice. We got the schism right here.
I take all the shame. I don't care.
No, don't.
I take it as my own. But that's the thing. I came into contact with it through a YouTube channel. I can't remember the name. And it was a single episode that was separated into three videos. And I watched the three of them just out of curiosity. I was hooked, and I was like, I wanted more. So Google did its magic and introduced me to Critical Role. I started watching, and I was like, yeah, this is the idea of a role playing game that I really wanted to implement. It was like. I came from a background of video games. I started playing video games since I was 5, games like Arx Fatalis, Skyrim, Dragon Age, and stuff like that, with character creation and customization and everything, and all those aspects that I love. I saw Dungeons and Dragons, and I was like, "So, you telling me that if I can imagine it, it simply exists." Cool. And since where I come from, no one knows what this is, and those who do so because of conversations with me, and there is no interest in playing. It took me 1 full year to have my first gaming session. I've been playing since then, those 5 years that I mentioned before. And yeah, you need to mention Critical Role, you need to mention Dungeons and Dragons, and that's one of the reasons why when you go to Discord channels and RPG groups, the new players come asking for Dungeons and Dragons, and the group in their local area that play Dungeons and Dragons. And then there is the two parties, the two sides of the coin, where you have one side that goes, yeah, you can join my group, and I'll show you the ropes, and we can have some fun together. And you have the other side of the coin that goes like, Dungeons and Dragons, really? You should play this, and this. Dungeons and Dragons? No, that's a big no.
I'm guilty of that. I mean, I try to come across as not negative, but the
you just did it to me.
Yeah, I did it. I did it. I'm guilty. As I'm saying, I'm guilty. The thing is, in my not quite defense, is it's a bit weird how, as a player of other games, you got this message coming online, which is so intense from the D&D community, and it's always about D&D, always about its feats, about turning John Wick into a fifth edition character, and so on. And it's very tough when you're like, well, you could try Feng Shui too. It would be a bit better for John Wick, and it's difficult to come across not as a horrible snob, even when you're not trying to make despicable jokes like I just did. André, to finish the topic of the evolution of the community in Portugal, anything to add before we move on to our next question?
Well, we can add that we don't feel that that difference you feel there regarding creatures and the role-playing community. There isn't such one. At least now, like we don't have a creature group at Facebook or whatever social platform. There is.
Well, here's your call. You need to start one.
Yeah, but they are already blended with the role playing community itself.
Okay, like, cool.
So it's really okay to have creatures with role play. There isn't such difference. Like. Here in Portugal, you don't say, oh, that's a creature, and that's a role player. You see? We don't have that difference here. And that's quite good and bad, I don't know. Well, it doesn't something. Really... Yeah, it might start.
It's not enough of you. It would be like, look at that guy over there. Look at that girl. And there's two of them.
No, we don't have. Hopefully, we will not ever have that difference.
We've got a... GRN Mariano saying that they had a creatures meetup in Rolisboa.
That's weird.
True story.
So moving on into the next question, is there such thing as Portuguese-flavored role-playing games? And the best way to address that, who are your favorite RPG authors from Portugal? And I had someone, I cannot find back who it was, but in the chat, who was asking, are there any... Portuguese role-playing games which were exported somewhat successfully to English nations?
I know of only one case where that happened, of a pure Portuguese role-playing game. There was, I don't remember the name.
It's a pure,
yes.
The pure Portuguese experience.
No, when I mean pure, I mean simply in the sense of it was written by Portuguese, it was created by Portuguese, it was self-published by Portuguese people. It was Radakai. It was a guy from who I believe lives in Lisbon right now. And one of my friends helped them in the endeavor. And it's a very steampunkish meets D&D fantasy. And it was published in the traditional way, only in the sense of it was very thoroughly illustrated with wonderful art. And it was published in a 500-page book, but it was all paid by him. So it's not so much it got published, but it's in English. And being in English is possibly one of the few that you could theoretically buy. I mean, you can get more, but all very indie in style and flavor. That's the only case I can remember. It was like a few years ago. And it's very traditionalist in that sense, that it's great production values, a big book, lots of art, and in English. I don't think it was ever published in Portuguese in any shape, form, or form.
Interesting. Wow. So, Daniel, any favorite author?
Since I really didn't try many games, both international and national, I can only pinpoint two names for two different reasons. The first one is a friend of ours, Bruno Ribeiro, that created Na Floresta. You can translate it into in the forest, which is a one-page RPG, really simple, that is focused on kids, and it's about animals in the forest having a little adventure. It's really simple, and more than fulfilling its goal into being really, really fun and interesting for the target group, the target audience, kids. It also is a really cool game to introduce new players into the genre, instead of just going, I want to try role playing games. Here's the player handbook, the Dungeon Master's Guide, and the Monster Manual. Maybe there is this one, this single page. We can start here, and it's amazing. The other one is João Mariano. That was already mentioned here before. We've been talking recently because both World of Darkness and both my Vampire Masquerade campaign and a new game that I've been making, the most recent one, and we were sharing impressions and the like. And I came into a game that he made a few years back called Cidade Obscura, Obscure City, if you want to go to translate it, which is basically his take into the World of Darkness. And it's a hack of another hack. And the result is a very simple game that you don't really need to study 25 or plus years of lore in order to get the setting right. And the since about the flavor aspect of the question, I can name André and his work about converting, adapting creatures from Portuguese folklore and some episodes of our history into the format of Dungeons & Dragons 5th edition.
André, tell us about that.
Oh, I've been hooked. Them. So yeah, I have a project regarding that show, Roll for Diplomacy. One of the guests was a Portuguese writer, and he published a book with the title Traditional Portuguese Bestiary. And it's a kid's book with monsters from our folklore, not like the fantasy or the mythology, but from the folklore itself, from the popular stories that spread
from generations. In other, from since those stories you tell to scare your kids, mm-hmm. Don't go around the pool, don't go around the well. Water well. Yeah, something will come grab you and take you down into the abyss and hit you.
Yeah, and after that episode, I decided, okay, I will start a new show, which was Monster Monday. Every Monday, I designed a creature from the Portuguese folklore and created a Portuguese monster sheet. I was trying to make it all in Portuguese, and it was a pain in the fucking ass, freaking ass, in the fucking ass, because...
Too late!
The words...
For listener, a freaking ass is a Portuguese dish.
Yes, it's a Portuguese word. So it was really hard, because sometimes in the stream, we spent like 10 minutes talking about a word. And yeah, it was really... But it was nice. At this moment, the project is in standby. But yeah, this year it will go. I will restarting the project and hopefully finish it.
Hopefully. Cool, amazing. For people watching us, or videos swapped around, that happens.
Yeah.
And that's it. And it's gonna remain like this for the rest of the show. So. Claudia, you André now, and Daniel, you Claudia. But I think we've got a Mariano, a J Mariano in the chat room. So is that actually Joe? Wow!
Yes.
Thank you so much for joining us. We need to record an episode with you in the future.
Yes, you need.
Little side note: I've been asked by someone, a publisher, I won't say who, for authors from different countries across Europe, potential authors to contribute to a Call of, not Call of Cthulhu, a Cthulhu project, Lovecraft project. So if you are a writer from Portugal or any European nation and you're interested to write Cthulhu adventures and you got experience, please do send me an email. I sadly cannot say more. It's not something robust, but I've been asked if I knew any people, and I would be very, very happy to get you in touch with who asked me for such people. Claudia, I don't think you had a favorite author to tell us about, did you?
So I'm going to tell you that person, that my favorite Portuguese author would be Ricardo Tavares, a.k.a. Gamer Driven, Jogo Sonhador. I will warn you in advance, though, he is also one of my best and oldest friends, which means I'm not exactly the most unbiased of sources. Still, he's been gaming and role-playing for almost as long as I have, like only a couple of years difference. And he has this huge passion for the theoretical side of games, just going from game theory to gaming design and even design in general. We are very, very similar as authors of games. I do it because it amuses me. He does it because he's really good at it. In that we're both very, very whimsical and sometimes like madly experimental when we're creating RPGs. But unlike me, I have this and the kitchen sink approach to RPGs. everything he does is incredibly polished, incredibly clever, even knowing that his most weird mental stuff. To me, he is hands down the best, most interesting role-playing game author in Portugal, because whether he's doing hacks from other games or creating his own games from scratch, more importantly, and this is really good, if he likes you, you're going to get your own role-playing game for Christmas. I got a Cyber Generation hack, wow. Monster Hearts, and it's the best thing ever. Like, best thing ever.
He needs to find someone to translate his work.
Let me take a note.
Yeah, Ricardo is
fucking You do know what awesome. Cyber Generation is, right? Cyber Generation is like that teen oppression spin-off teen drama in Cyberpunk 2020 setting. And then it became its own game. And he actually did a hack of that for Monster Hearts, so which is amazing.
Amazing. Nitzel, who's taking care of the engineering here, managed to put us back in place. Thank you so much, Nitzel, for dealing with that. So all the people you mentioned, would you think they have something in common? Is there something you find which is common to authors and publishers from Portugal?
First of all, the love for the role-playing games and the love for creating stuff, both adapting or creating something from your own blood, sweat, and tears. And the other would be, since there is no official way of publishing your work, everyone goes indie. Platforms like Patreon, Itch.io, DriveThruRPG tend to be the main source for letting your work be public, in so to speak.
Yeah. And there's also like regarding the publishing thing, the common aspect, at least some years ago, was like you have games made by Portuguese authors and designers, indie obviously, and all there are like dozens of games, and they are all somewhere in Google Drives or folders lost somewhere in the internet, and it was a thing that I try to make, like people going into Itch.io because it's an awesome platform and trying to show their work at a platform. We don't use DriveThru yet so too much, but yeah, at least we are starting to have new people showing up on Itch.io, and I'm trying to now hook my favorite author. Okay, can I reel back? We already mentioned Ricardo Tavares, which is awesome. Obviously, it's a really awesome designer and role player. He has what is for me maybe the best Portuguese RPG content podcast, the Jogador Sonhador, about RPG theory and game design. But I have to say another name, which is also a very close friend of mine, João Mariano, is at this very moment, at least from 5 years or 4 years ago, designing a role-playing game, Heróis Modernos, which stands for Modern Heroes, a role-playing game about creating a comic of superheroes. Now, what is, I already play-tested it, at least two or three times.
By the apocalypse, I think you said.
Yeah, it's somehow, it started with, I think it started with Fate. Then it shifted to PBTA, Powered by the Apocalypse. But now it's its own design.
Oh, cool.
And, and the beautiful detail about the game is that, and probably he already notices it, and this is why it's so hard to write a freaking game. It's because the game is played in like a two-player perspective, not in the first player, not in the third player. So you don't play it in the actor stance. You don't always play it in the outer stance of the role-playing games. You have a very unique perspective where you play the superhero created in the comic, but from the point of view of the artist, of the author.
Oh, so you got the fourth wall. You're atop the fourth wall to one of my favorite YouTubers.
It's really weird. It's really weird because it works in any way you play it. You can play it in actor stance and in outer stance. It works in both ways. But the way that your mind eye creates the imaginary elements is from the point of view of the artist, of the author. But your decision making is to the superhero inside the comic you are creating. So it's a meta thing that somehow works, and it's beautifully designed. It's diceless. And it's awesome, and hopefully finish the game this year, or I'll be very mad at him.
You better, because I have Death Note, and I'm not afraid of using it.
Oh, that's good one.
If you have a Death Note, I've got some British politicians. I got a list I need to send.
Let me just grab it. Okay.
So, I was just about to say, Nuno mentioned Dragon Meat here. I think in terms, I know Spiel is a big convention, Expo is a big convention here in the UK, but really for role-playing games, my personal, I'm not objective with that. It's my hometown, but Dragon Meat here in London for me is the best in terms of strictly role-playing games. And if I could just make a little call to the authors in the chat room, the authors among you and your friend, I would really recommend banding together and trying to come as a group to Dragon Meet this year in the end of November, early December. I'm sure we could facilitate something with the organizer. You could get a booth together, or maybe I'm just throwing ideas like that. There's the UK Indie RPG League, which is already something about banding together small authors. I think they could be very welcoming, and I would be really awesome if some of you would be interested in showing up and networking with all the amazing publishers who attend the event. Someone is telling. I don't remember. I had a question. Sorry, you were saying go ahead.
I would say let's do it. Let's just go there.
Yeah.
I was planning going at Dragon Meet, and then Thailand happens. So yeah, if you have
come
to
Games Expo, come Games Expo.
Okay, I'll go.
Yeah, I'll be there.
Actually, it's a good segue for our final section of the show. Portuguese RPG conventions. Where is the fun to be had?
Lisboa!
But
we
can start earlier than Lisboa. There were some conventions with role-playing games that Claudia can surely talk about it.
It's as they're saying, Lisboa is the first and only role-playing game-only convention in Portugal. It's born out the massive effort of a bunch of extraordinary fans. It's also super free. And it's also in Lisbon, which is why people are still annoying me, because I had to miss the first one because I was LARPing in the UK. And they won't let it go, will you, Mariano? I know it. I saw you in the chat. Anyway, that's also a bit of the problem, because board games have become incredibly popular in Portugal, which means role-playing games are slowly being pushed away. So, for example, the big convention in Porto in the north is InvictaCon. And it started with quite a lot of role play and a lot of board games. But lately, like, there has been this certain, okay, yeah, role play is an afterthought. And for the longest time, especially in the early 2000s, most find that you didn't find many other tables. The only other table to find would be Ricardo Tavares, trying to look, guys, there's other stuff other than D20. And like this year in Forbidden, well, not Forbidden Planet, sorry, in InvictaCon, actually, we were told early on, we don't have spare tables for role play. We're not going to have any role play this year. And they just changed their mind very, very at the 11th hour. However, like I said, there's nothing like Lisboa, because Lisboa is pure role play only, and D&D is just one of the games in display as far as I know. So that for me is an extraordinary thing, because I've been playing since 97 and there hadn't ever been an invention. However, there were very small conventions, like almost meets, but if I had to choose what I would like to see coming back would be the D&D day, which is where we take D&D and we run D&D, but with every other system except D&D. So, turns out, Buff Vampire Slayer RPG, which is based on cinematic version of the Unis system, works incredibly well for combat. It is really good. Like, the Pathfinder people were flabbergasted because it works so good for combat. We actually had a moment where someone tossed the dwarf that was dual-yielding two axes, and they just decapitated the vampire or something. It was really good fun. And turns out that Neverwinter Nights, by way of parameters, actually creates an interesting place to play. It's really fun because you focus the personal needs and prejudice against elves, and you don't actually keep going to the dungeons, and it's still great fun. So I still desperately want to try and convince people to do again a not D&D day for people like me to have a bit of a taste of they can still play what they love, but there are other things out there.
Question, it's not based on anything actually planned or happening, but I'm just thinking of the question I was asked last year. Let's say the personality of Dungeons & Dragons wanted to have a D&D Euro Tour stop in Portugal. Where would be the best place to do so?
Lisboa, I suppose. I mean,
Is there a specific shop there or something like that?
It's more like where most people, and if they want to do a stop, it's where they're more likely to have people interested. Then again, I don't know what D&D is like because I do not follow D&D, but I'm going to guess. And if they can go to Hall Lisboa, that actually would be really nice because it would give more coverage to the convention, and they only deserve it.
It's often difficult to, sadly, that's the advice I give to convention, sadly, it's often difficult with scheduling. Daniel, Andre, anything to add in terms of conventions?
Well,
I mean, everything has already been laid out. Lisboa is the only convention in Portugal that is solely focused on role-playing games. And in the previous edition, the last year's edition, where I attended for the very first time, and it was amazing. Andre, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that Dungeons & Dragons wasn't the main gameplay there. There was a lot of witty stuff.
Yeah. So I can actually, since I'm like the founder or one of the founders from Lisboa, I have two things to say. So before Lisboa, there was like in Lisbon, like in Porto or at the north, the role-playing community went to LisboaCon, which is the convention of role-playing of board games, and there was a space for role-playing community, and it was the event, the convention, where everyone meets and starts playing and shares stories and whatever. In the last year, or in the last 2 years, LisboaCon had some issues, and last year there wasn't a LisboaCon. And we, the roleplay community, started to feel we need to have our own space. So it's a crazy story. It's end of November. Nuno, which you know, Nuno Teixeira, asks me and our friend...
Sorry, Nuno from the London RPG community.
Yes. He asks me, can we arrange something with a stream for our show? He had a beautiful show. Yes, his streaming show. Help me, Nuno. Well, he had a streaming show.
And Counter Roleplay, I mean, he's on many of them. For some reason, he's invited, but I am never invited.
Professional Dice Rollers?
Professional Dice Rollers, thank you. Okay, yes. Cool. Yeah, he had his own show with his own players. Portuguese players spread around the world playing Dungeons & Dragons. And he asked me and Bruno from Hall Initiative if we could arrange a small event, something for the professional Last Rollers followers and like a streaming event. So what happens? Me and Bruno really work well together, and we challenge ourselves. And we said, well, let's make a convention. Let's make like the first shot. And in 1 month, we arranged a library, awesome library, which are now our partners. And like 100 people went to the first event, which we will not be calling the first event, the first convention. It was Rol Lisboa 2018. It was crazy. And it was good also. It was, but the original plan was subverted. Nuno was trying to make a small thing, and we just blew it all out. 2019, we decided to actually make a proper one. We decided to talk with the other groups of role players, communities, content creators, platforms, shops. And we've managed to make Rol Lisboa 2019 at the Marvilla Library, which is a library that is trying really, really hard to make the local community grow and is really engaging the gaming aspect. They have like video game events, game jams, and a lot of stuff. And they hugged Rol Lisboa. This year, we have Dungeons & Dragons was like the least played game. And I say it proudly, obviously. We have a lot of indie games, some Portuguese games, Ars Mechanica, that is being designed by Rui Anselmo. We had Terra Adentro, which is like the Portuguese dungeon world by Ricardo Tavares, Jogador Sonhador. And I do believe we had Daniel's game Asylum, which makes people cry and go to bed with nightmares.
Indeed it does.
Indeed it does. And we had workshops making your golem miniature, making your own campaign map, making your own adventure, how to plan a campaign and other stuff like that. We had a live stream with a group which is called the Rock and Roll, which is trying to be the Portuguese Critical Role. They have some public figures, like a very famous guy from the most famous radio, which is Pedro Fernandes. And a voice actor, Kimbe, and other people that work in the, not as a celebrity, but as a public figure. And they are making their own show. They will start now in February their own new season. They went to Rol Lisboa. It was awesome. And but regarding the numbers, now, this is the part that actually I have to talk. It's really different from whatever you might expect, because Spain, France, and England, you guys have a big community. We have a very small, but awesome. It's awesome, but it's a small community. We don't have like 200 people in the convention. That's saying like, it's too much. We had like 150, maybe 170, and that's pushing, okay? And from our standard, that's a lot. Like our weekly or monthly meetings have 20 to 30 people. When they have 30 people, they are overboarding, overloading with it. So we are a really small community because of many reasons. But Rol Lisboa is the new thing, is a new convention, and come to Rol Lisboa.
It's in October, right? 24th and 25th of October.
Yes, 24th and 25th October 2020, in the same place, Marvilla Library. The Portuguese don't resist to playing and playing games in English, so you will not have a problem if you go there.
You know what? It's very tempting. I was asking Nuno about Portugal because we're planning some holidays with Pacifilia, my wife, and yeah, Portugal is on the list. It was not really October we planned for, but yeah. All of that sounds very interesting. So she should be listening to this later. Hello, my love. So that would be very cool to do two things at once. I had a very interesting question from I'm sorry, I hope I pronounced it correctly, Rao Mariano. But before that, do we have anything else to add about convention?
Well, from what I know, I hopefully want or at least desire that the Northern community makes their own RPG focused space, so I can have an excuse to go up there. Not that I need it, but you see. And our landscape here in the south, like Faro and Alfeira, whatever, Portimão, the community is really small, and I don't believe that in the near future there will be having like a RPG focused convention. But there's always the board games, and I can say that the board gamer community says that Portugal has too many board game conventions. That's a thing here in Portugal. So we have too many board game conventions, but it's good. They are events, they are conventions, and the RPG community, in whatever place you are, you can bond to the board game community, board game convention, and just stick with it and play games.
There's a few things that are like more than a good segue. I think it's perfect to ask Mariano's question, which is, what do you three think is the next step to help grow the community and share your creations with other countries? It's kind of two questions, really. Claudia?
So I'm trying to see if I understood the question correctly. What is the role of the community in spreading role plays created in Portugal to outside the country?
This sort of two parts of the question. The first part of the question is, what is the next step to grow the community within Portugal? So that's the first question. And second question is to be more visible abroad and share creations abroad.
I actually don't know. Here's the thing, though. In general, and this is sort of connects with how Portuguese games come through. Like, they're very indies. And a gamer dreamer man, I have a massive date with him because he refuses to translate his latest really good book. Like, we had RP Genesis in August last year, and he created his own take to Dungeon World, and he made it really, 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 really inspired by Portuguese legends. And I kept telling him, well, you should do a translation. That is some really good stuff. Like, it's a really interesting take. Like, he rewrote the roles completely, the character sheets. And he kept saying, no, this is a game for Portugal. This is a game for Portuguese. I don't see the purpose in translating it. And I think that to grow the community, we would actually have to have big games, which happens in France. Like, you started in France.
I started all of that.
But the community in France started at the same time as in Portugal with the Red Box. And for some reason, maybe because you're more than us, maybe because you didn't have a detectorship to bring you back by about 10 to 20 years, you have big games being published. You have your own games. You have In Nomine Veritas Tannis, whatever.
In Nomine Veritas Magna Veritas.
Yeah. You have your own games from the very start. And that never happened in Portugal. I don't know why. It might be a social thing. So maybe it will happen in time when we start to catch up with the rest of society, when people start going, I could actually create my own role-playing game. I mean, it doesn't have to be D&D, it can be other. And I think that when the people that play mainly D&D realize that, that's when that's going to happen. Because there's the older generation, like me and Marianne and Gamer Dreamer Man, we already know there are other games. We engage in them constantly. But right now, we need to happen in France and Belgium, because I have friends from France and Belgium, so I sort of have a bit of an idea what goes on. Is we need to educate them, I guess, to show them, look, you can create your own roleplay. You don't need to use the same roleplay for everything. And by the way, I'm not taking a pot shot at D&D, although I'm that all the time. I did the same. You mentioned when people took John Wick and made him as a D&D character. I did that with World of Darkness, which was my first game. Turned everything into storyteller system. So I'm not this because people from D&D or anything. It's just you cling to your mother's apron and their mother is D&D. So I'm going to be honest. I don't know. We also are a fairly poor country, which means money for things like a convention about role-playing games might not get traction, might not get sponsors, might not contribute. So honestly, if you have any good ideas, I'd like to know them because I do want to help role-playing games become a more widespread thing in my country.
I mean, this is a platform to throw a stone in the lake and there's little waves and so on. So people, please, I will put the contact details of each of the guests here. And if you have ideas, whether or not you're from Portugal, and suggestions, and because all of this is very exciting, please do contact them to tell you about that. So Daniel, as the young kid on the block who makes weird faces when I say nomine satanis magna veritas, what's your opinion on Claudia's views on what should happen next, wishful thinking about what should be happening with the RPG community in Portugal?
I mean, when it comes to creating content and everything else, that's the thing. That's how it should be. That's what should be done in order to increase numbers and everything. But there's the other side of the coin that I mentioned previously. You have people that try to get into the hobby and welcome into a D&D group who are shoved off by some idiot that thinks that some games are better than others. And this breaks the community. And even when you try to aggregate people, what happens is the niche effect. There are some people that go into a Facebook group and say, hey, is there someone in my local area that is hosting a game I'd like to try, and that either is or there isn't? And that's the thing. They go into the group. If everything goes right, they stay in that group, and maybe there's a chance that they will welcome somebody else, or they take the journey into another department. If we're trying to make things international or something, that they it would need to pass through there the aggregation aspect and the break the stereotype and the fear of creating your own work, your own adventure, your own game. Maybe it's the start like I started. I started playing Dungeons and Dragons. I started creating content for Dungeons and Dragons. I created items. I created classes, I slowly started getting to the realization that Dungeons and Dragons isn't everything. There is Vampire the Masquerade. There is Call of Cthulhu, and it's because of my bad experience with Call of Cthulhu that I created Asylum, and stuff like that. And maybe if someone out there creates a publishing, of course everything would go boom with all the creators that are there would converge into it and get their games published in Portuguese or not. Until that happens, we have to settle with what we have, which are the indie platforms like Itch.io and Patreon, and maybe it will go somewhere. I don't know.
I'm wondering, so it's kind of a twofold question. The first question would be, I'm wondering if D&D players could, there's the DMs Guild. So I'm wondering if Portuguese D&D fans are or could write adventures on the DMs Guild in English or even in Portuguese.
And they do.
And the second question related to that, or it's more general thinking than a question, is as a foreigner to Portugal, are there any kind of, osmosis exchanges between Portugal and Brazil, which seems to be a much larger market in terms of the number of copies or whatever you're doing, that you would do, who happens to be speaking Portuguese?
Okay, so the first question, as far as I know, there are multiple members of that guild and that they regularly publish. I think there is a Portuguese girl who is involved in one of these D&D workshop courses where you learn how to write things, how to write adventures. Yeah.
What's her name, you said? Sorry?
Beatriz Dias. She works a lot with Travis Lega.
Cool.
Yeah, from Scarlet Lands and stuff like that.
So as for the second, look, it's been 20 years to try to put the translated Vampire the Masquerade in Portugal. We're still taking the piss from their translations of the distance. So I don't think it's ever going to happen. Like we've said before, we're incredibly resistant to translated stuff. So I'm not seeing the osmo. I mean, I will give you a thing. Brazilian role players are now putting out some really good games of their own, like based on their own culture and not just being a replica of what's already out there. Because I do know that they had some really popular fantasy games, fantasy RPGs that never came to Portugal because we didn't want them. We didn't see any value, as far as I could tell, in them, because we go, look, if we want to play this heartbreaker D&D game, we'll just go play in D&D, even though they were massively popular in Brazil. But now, like, they're now their own projects, their own things. So whereas I don't think anytime soon we're going to take their translations, I think that some of their projects are getting at least a couple of people here. I know Gamer Dreamer Man has been regularly following the scene and buying their stuff. I know Mariano also buys some of their stuff, as far as I know. So, yeah, it might come some things, not because we have a common language, although that helps, but more like because they're putting out some really interesting things. They're putting out fantasy-based instead of traditional English fantasy based off their own indigenous fantasy. So it just for the novelty of it, for the ability to widen people's horizons and discover interesting things, that's where those motives come from.
Rao is clarifying that it's actually very expensive to import and export products between Brazil and Portugal, since there's no trade agreement that I'm aware of. And speaking of trade agreement and the news and all of that, which fills us with joy, I've got reports of Britons stranded in Algarve who are very motivated to support the RPG community. So El Cid is commenting that in the chat room. So yeah, please, dear Britons abroad, get in touch with our guest to support anything going on. Andre, did our last question inspire you in anything?
Well, regarding the DMs Guild, yes, we do have some people that do some titles. Being the most established author, Beatriz Dias, she is awesome. I actually met her almost by accident regarding Lisboa. She volunteered for Lisboa without.
Really?
She volunteered. She was the blonde girl on the main on the reception, and that's crazy.
Oh.
That's crazy. She's like the most established, probably Portuguese author on DMs Guild, and no one knew that she read stuff, and somehow in a casual conversation, I found out and I said, "What are you doing here? You are the perfect person to make a workshop. You are the more experienced of all of us. And she, she's really shy. And yes, she's the most established Portuguese author that I know, and probably it is in Dem's Guild. I've tried. I've made my shot last year. I've made Wedding Lights, an adventure inspired by a Portuguese legend, the Portuguese of Princess Fatima or Princess Oriana. It's there. It's available for everyone who wants to run something inspired by a Portuguese legend. I do believe there is a supplement that another Portuguese author may wrote. It's like subclasses or something like that, but I don't know for sure who she is and what are the her titles.
It's very tempting hearing you back. What started the release present was a panel about tabletop role-playing games in the UK and Ireland. And at the time, my guest, who I picked to represent Dungeons & Dragons, sort of, she was not able to make it. So I made a second panel just about Dungeons & Dragons in the UK and Ireland. Hearing you, and since... You know, we always have this debate, D&D and the other games. I think I could run maybe later strictly Dungeons & Dragons in Portugal. That could be interesting with all the amazing people you are naming. I think we're going to move to the goodbyes and the plugs, unless anyone's got anything to add. No?
Oh, no. Let's go.
Yep, go ahead, Claudia.
No, I was saying that. I'm good. Go for it. Shall I make my plug?
No, wait. Yes. But a second, I just wanted to say, from what you describe, I will make a personal plea to Gamer Dreamer Man to please translate his work to English, because I'm personally someone would really... there's the Aswang projects. For instance, if I'm not confusing horribly things, I think it's a role-playing game in the Philippines with the local culture in the game. I'm stuff like Aquelarre for Spain. I'm a big a person very interested in having role-playing games which tells a bit of something different, something abroad. And I think we should have as many of these as possible. I'd like to see these from all the countries in Europe. I see that from countries from Africa, India, the Middle East, the Far East, the Japanese games. I think all of those role-playing games are a very unique way to engage with a culture. It might be flawed, but then what is not flawed? I think it's much more deep and interesting than, let's say, a movie. So I would really hope that Gamer Dreamer Man would consider translating his work and maybe again joining us in Dragon Meat. On that, Claudia, please could you say your goodbye and tell to people where they can find you and plug anything you have to plug away.
Okay, so I don't have a logo for me because I do D&D and I don't have a media personality. I'm a crotchety little bitch. Oh, sorry, I can't say bitch, can I? Anyway.
Bitch is a Portuguese word. It's a little lamb.
If you're in, I'm mostly in the Portuguese Discord channel because I admin it. You're welcome to come to RP Genesis every year in August, where we for 7 months coffee day we create an RPG from scratch. Or if you're in the UK and you like LARPing and you're into Warhammer 40K, I'm one of the head writers from Death Unto Darkness, which runs 2 events per year. We're like literally coming out of a break. The next event is in July, I believe, and the other one, I think it's October. So if that's your cup of tea, you're welcome to come either as a player or if you want to just try it out. We always need to, which means we will give you really interesting NPCs to play and treat you like gold as far as we're concerned, because we do rely a lot on our wonderful, wonderful crew to stab our players very safely, but stab them constantly. Yeah. So bye, guys. It was a pleasure to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for joining. I mean, it was amazing. Andre?
Okay, so you can find me at ScumbagDM, although I'm not that scumbag, over at Twitter and Instagram, the same tag. You can find my independent publisher at Itch.io, Marebasha, Mare.basha, Itch.io. I've released small games, being the last one, the most famous, the Orc and the Pie, a game inspired by the Mount Cook D&D post on 22, I believe, 2002, regarding the smallest adventures ever. And you can find me also at Roll Initiative Twitch channel. And at this very moment, I am getting ready soon to be Kickstarter project, Dirty Town, a role-playing game about the corny adventures of pigeons in Dirty Town.
In English?
Yes, it will be in English. It's for the Zine Quest 2, the Lucrane Zine thing over at Kickstarter, and it will be launched mid-February to late February. We are still managing that stuff, and stay tuned on it. Also, ooh. Callum, an invite, not an invite, I'm inviting myself to, I have a French game. I went to France.
To my place on your couch, what?
Wait, I went to France, I have a French game, which is Te Deum Porum Massacre.
Oh.
And I don't know how to read or speak French. So I want to play this game. Please, master it to me.
So, Te Deum Porum Massacre, I don't know how to read it because it's literally the format of one of those Bibles, you know, called
Missal.
It's a huge game by Jean-Philippe Jaworski, who is also a novelist. He wrote something which is called Gagner la Guerre, which is kind of the, I would call it the French Song of Ice and Fire. I really want to do an episode about this game, but I'm struggling to find a game master. I got the game, but it's a big game, a very serious game about the Saint-Barthélemy massacre, very precise, very extensive into historical features. So it's a steep slope to climb. But yeah, we'll be in touch about that. Daniel, you're closer.
Well, you can find me in my Facebook at Daniel Carvalho. You can ask me any sort of questions about everything, creative writing, creating RPGs, insulting me for taking hours of your sleep by playing my games. And when it comes to games, you can find them at my Itch.io page at 1DM3. My games are both in Portuguese and in English. And you can also find me on my Patreon, Font Histórias, and also through Roll Initiative, both into Facebook and Patreon. And that's it. I appreciate the invitation to be part of this podcast, and I hope that my contribution was at least useful and enlightening in some way.
I mean, I'm extremely happy about this panel. So it was very interesting. Your input, the three of you, about Portugal was fascinating. I don't remember which one of you actually reached me out, suggested the idea for this panel. Was it Andre? No?
It was Daniel.
I mean, that was amazing. And if there are people out there from anywhere across Europe who want to come forward to suggest panels, I would love to have them. Please do get in touch with me. Sometimes it takes time. It took time for this one to happen. Yeah. It was delayed a couple of times, but that's the way things go. But when it happened, it's amazing. All the things which were mentioned, maybe not everything, but as many as possible, I will try to put links in the description of this episode. So if you're listening to that or watching it on YouTube, do click or come to our website to find those details. In those details, you will find a way to support the Rollist or the RPG Academy via Patreon. We do that out of our love for the hobby, but we do have expense. And more importantly, your support through Patreon allows us to do more things. I take advantage of personal trips sometimes to record abroad. I recorded in a game shop in France. I look forward to releasing that. But if I had more support on Patreon, I would more easily consider go to Rollisboa, for instance, or Luca, or Essen, or God knows where. I mean, I'm so thankful for every penny of the £24 I get per month. But if you like the show and you'd like more content of it, please support us via Patreon, because literally every penny you put in there are put into creating content for you and the community, and it goes the same for the RPG Academy. I was Kaloum. Thank you so much for joining us. See you soon. I don't know what the next panel is going to be about, but I got some leads. So hopefully see you next month. And in the meantime, have good games.
Thanks for listening to this panel by The Rollist Present, our spin-off show derived from The Rollist Podcast. The Rollist Presents aims to showcase the tabletop RPG industry and community across Europe through panels held on Twitch or at live events. If you enjoyed this episode and would like to see more, or if you would like us to attend or even organize more live events, your support would help me do just that. First of all, there's Patreon. Patreon is an online platform allowing individuals like you and me to support podcasters, artists, and game designers via small but regular donations. In our case, the donations are limited to a single one per month. You set the amount, and even a single pound goes a long way in encouraging me to continue producing all our shows and events. Actually, the equipment I used to record panels at live events was financed in part by rollists like you who already support the show via Patreon. Doing so will grant you access to our modest bonus show, Café Rollist, the caffeinated RPG break. Our main shows do not include any advertising and they will all remain available for free. But I do have expenses, producing the show, organizing or attending events. Any kind of support allows me not only to continue, but to do more, like travel to a convention or game shop near you, in the UK or across the channel and maybe the pond one day. If you cannot afford to support The Rollist financially, it's totally fine. What I value the most is having you as a listener. And there are many other means to support the show. You can subscribe via Apple Podcasts or any podcast player, Spotify, Stitcher, Podchaser, Podbean. You can leave a review on Apple Podcasts or just a 5-star rating without any text. It really helps to have the show noticed by more listeners. You can also be a huge help through recommending the show to friends online, in your gaming groups, or at your local RPG club. And never hesitate to message me with your thoughts via email, Facebook, or Twitter. I am always happy to interact with you all. This is why I'm doing this show. Finally, we have a monthly newsletter that you can join to stay updated about our releases, our upcoming episodes, and events. Just click the description of this episode and you will find a link to this newsletter. This was Kaloum for The Rollist. Thanks for listening to this episode all the way to the end. And remember, you are The Rollist.